Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In 1885, the country's first playground was conceived of in Boston, Massachusetts. Consisted entirely of a pile of sand, and it was a big hit. The sand gardens, as they were called, gave kids a safe place to play away from Boston's busy streets. Soon, swings and seesaws were added to the mix, and what is now known as the playground movement was birthed. The playground has continued to evolve, incorporating everything from recycled tires to works of art. Today, playgrounds are made up of colorful plastic equipment, short slides, and soft surfaces that emphasize safety. Environments that some critics say make for a tame, homogenous play experience that could actually stunt kids' sense of thrill and adventure. Here to fill us in on the past and future of playgrounds is Ruth Graham. She's a New Hampshire-based writer and frequent contributor to the Boston Globe Ideas section, where we found her article, How the American Playground Was Born in Boston. Ruth, great to have you with us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So first, let's go back to those first sand piles in Boston. Where did the idea come from?
Well, it came from anxiety. So you have, as cities are expanding in the 19th century, there's this concern by a lot of experts that kids are no longer getting exercise, they're no longer getting fresh air and the opportunity to run around wild in nature. And then you also have this concurrent anxiety of what kids are up to when they're running wild in the streets. Kids with time on their hands is sort of a perennial anxiety. So from that, there's this idea that we need to build something to occupy these kids and give them the opportunity to play. So the sand gardens come from Germany, where a lot of progressive child development ideas are coming
that's
from
where
the 19th century. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's imported to Boston, and it's this philanthropic group that decides, let's just give it a try. And they dumped a pile of sand in the yard of a chapel in an immigrant neighborhood in the North End, actually. And it's a huge hit. So it's that first one, that first pile of sand is mostly for toddlers, and they're supervised, and they have little wheelbarrows that they're playing with. But it's a huge hit, and it expands really rapidly, and soon you're getting playground equipment and older kids, and it just really takes off from there.
And by the mid-20th century, we have playgrounds as popular as ever with exciting and fresh designs. Tell us a little bit about this kind of golden age, I guess, of the playground.
Yeah, so within that first few decades, you have the really standard equipment, jungle gyms and tall slides and things like that. But really, within a few decades, you're getting the sculptor is Osamu Noguchi is designing some really modern, advanced, fascinating equipment. That's, if you can find those photos online, it's really kind of amazing. And in the mid-1950s, the Museum of Modern Art in New York sponsors a playground design competition that really spurs a lot of creativity. And the other great thing about the equipment of the 50s and 60s is you're really seeing this kind of space age energy. So there are robots and, there's rocket ships and lunar landers. You really get this kind of distinct, exciting design in that era that we don't see anymore.
But it wasn't long before the playground started being upgraded with safer, more innocuous equipment, and sand began to disappear. So what was behind these changes?
Well, there are a couple of high-profile injuries in the 1970s. So, there's at least one kid that's falling off a tall slide and getting hurt on this concrete, the concrete
Underneath,
yeah. Exactly. You have consumer advocates emerging. One of them's comparing playgrounds to Russian roulette. And so there's this anxiety, some of it very understandable, and others, there's this really extreme backlash to the kind of riskier equipment at that time. And then the Consumer Product Safety Commission comes out with guidelines in the early 1980s. So what you have in the 80s and 90s is really just the phasing out of all the wild and wacky and dangerous equipment. So you see guardrails everywhere. You see equipment shrinking. You see the loss of climbing opportunities. Slides are shrinking. Swings are going away. And sand, too, as you said, is disappearing. In large part because of a paranoia about junky needles. You can picture this sort of 80s uh-huh. frenzy over drug use. And again, I don't want to say that never happened, but it really is pretty overblown. It's not that there's an actual epidemic of kids being stuck by junky needles in sand, but there's a fear of it. And fear drives a lot of those changes.
Fear and lawsuits.
Exactly, exactly.
So we have this rubber padded playgrounds, loads of tunnels, very low to the ground, and a share of critics, some of whom you spoke to, who say they're tame. One in particular said she called today's playgrounds the McDonald's model. Now, what's behind her criticism?
Yeah, can't you picture that? Exactly. You know, anyone who's ever been to a McDonald's knows what that means. Well, there's this pendulum, if you think of a pendulum between adventure and safety on playgrounds, and the pendulum in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, it's swinging just all the way towards safety. So playgrounds are predictable, they're cushioned, they don't give kids opportunities for exercise. You know, they become the symbol of everything that's wrong with contemporary childhood. And this, you know, this backlash to helicopter parenting and this feeling that kids aren't allowed to be kids anymore. So it's this better safe than sorry model that a lot of experts are saying is just, it's not ideal, that we've swung too far to one end of the pendulum.
No, so we're swinging along the pendulum of history and the playground with Ruth Graham. She's a New Hampshire-based writer. She wrote about how the American playground was born in Boston for the Boston Globe Ideas section. So, right, we get this narrative, right, of the risk-averse, you know, coddled child. So what's developing then? Where's the pendulum swinging to next for the next generation of playgrounds?
Well, it is swinging back, and that's the good news for a lot of people. But it's not that we're going back to this era of sky-high metal slides over concrete. But we are, there are a couple of themes. So one is playgrounds that are patterned after nature. So instead of just being on a flat concrete slab, it's playgrounds that are built around hills and boulders and trees and really incorporating the natural environment. One of the neat things about slides built into hills is it gives kids this feeling of perilous, risky, tall slides, but without the actual risk of cracking your head open on concrete. Another theme is this idea of loose parts, which is kind of a trendy playground term that includes big blocks and tools like those early sand gardens had and sand itself. So just movable parts that just give kids a lot more play options and opportunities for creativity than the McDonald's model do. Mm-hmm. So things are changing.
Well, looking into this, you found that Europe is, surprise, surprise, in general, more experimental about the playgrounds. Talk about some of the really adventurous things that we would be, I don't know, scratching our heads over playgrounds developing there.
It's kind of amazing. So in Europe, there are these adventure playgrounds, which is a fancy way of saying junkyards for kids, where kids are able to, they set tires on fire, they're hammering nails into, you know, old pieces of wood and getting splinters, and they're splashing in mud. And there is a paid supervisor there who, you know, is reassuring to parents, but at the same time does not get truly involved, and it really is sort of a chaotic, crazy experience. But unsurprisingly, kids love it, mm-hmm. And they've been popular in Europe for decades. So there's obviously not a huge injury issue there. Although I think there's also a little bit of a different attitude toward injury. I interviewed a child development expert in Norway who said, you know, here when kids, if a child is playing and they fall and they break their arm, that's something that happens when a child is truly playing over the course of a childhood. And in the United States, if a kid breaks their arm, that's a sign that something has gone horribly wrong and something that needs fixing. So there's a different attitude, not to idealize Europe as we so often do, but there is just a different attitude toward play.
So Ruth, what do you think? You know, after looking at this, are we overthinking what kids need to play? I mean, basically, you can set them outside with a box usually, and that works for a while.
You can. I mean, kids will play with anything. They'll play anywhere. But at the same time, playgrounds are this opportunity to do so much more than what we've been doing with them for the last couple of decades at least. So if we're going to have playgrounds, and I think everyone agrees we should, then why not make them exciting and great and fun?
Without the fires.
Without the fires, yeah.
Ruth Graham, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ruth Graham, a freelance writer. She's based in New Hampshire, contributes to the Boston Globe Ideas section frequently, among other publications. You'll find a link to read her article, How the American Playground Was Born in Boston. There's also a terrific slideshow of playgrounds through the ages. Links at wordofmouthradio.org.